Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello listeners, I'm your speaker Casey, and welcome to another episode of The Colt Vault. Today I will be continuing a story that I've been telling for the past few weeks. The extremely sad story of Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallo. In part one, we covered the family history and looked into notable characters involved and finished with the last ever sightings of the two children. In part two, we looked at the strange behaviour of mother Lori Vallo and her new husband Chad Daybell, along with other family members such as Lori's niece Melanie, who unexpectedly divorced her husband and remarried very quickly, all the way through to Lori's brother Alex, who also married quickly but all of a sudden died on the bathroom floor of his new wife's home. We also ended part two with law enforcement involved in this case making a public announcement of the children's disappearance, telling the public that the FBI were involved in the investigation and that they needed any information the public might have. Now, in part three, with Lori and Chad living the high life in Hawaii, we will continue along the timeline and look deeper into those involved in this case, as well as the public speculation of what is really going on in Idaho, in the USA. I can't believe I'm going to say this again, but I'm going to have to split this last episode into two segments. This case is so vast and the research has left me with over 100 pages of information to present to you all. So I apologise that this will be part three and that there will actually be a part four. Before we begin, I would like to just draw attention to my Patreon. For anyone who is interested in receiving exclusive content, this month I will be releasing a special episode on the Amishin Rikyo cult, the movement that released deadly sarin gas on the subway stations of Tokyo. You can find me at patreon.com/thecultvault. Likewise, Colby Ryan, older brother of Tylee, has a GoFundMe currently live. The fund has been set up by Colby's wife's mother, Colby's mother-in-law, Carrie O'Neill Benson. The statement on the crowdfund says, "For clarification and validation, I am Colby's mother-in-law, Kelsey's mum. This is a valid GoFundMe. If there was any other help available, that would have been utilised. We are asking for help for these kids because they have been put in a horrific situation and need help getting out of it. This experience has been completely heartbreaking to watch Colby and Kelsey go through. As a mum, we have been right there with them going through it too. They have received so much love from some people and horrific attacks from others. There were many reasons they have not been able to talk about things while fighting their own daily battles and how devastating this has been for them. Many kind-hearted people have asked if they have a GoFundMe set up, and because of some of the hate they have been getting for not being more public, law enforcement asked them to lay low. The last thing we wanted was more reason for hate. But if you can find it in your heart to try and understand where Colby and his family are coming from, then I want to thank you, and if you can't, then please keep your comments to yourself unless you have walked in their shoes. But, that said, There are things they have been going through that most don't know about, and it's not something they are proud to put out in the public. So we have held off, but they are at breaking point and have decided, with much prompting from those of us closest to them, to just tell it and do a GoFundMe. So here it is. They are newlyweds with a baby about to turn one. Colby has been their sole support because they have a child with medical needs. Colby's mum Laurie has not spoken to him through any of this, and they can't even explain how bad things have gotten. To not know if his siblings are dead or hidden somewhere. The constant battle with trying to process emotions for the worst news possible and trying to stay hopeful at the same time is a special hell to try to walk out daily. Then to have your mum in zero contact with you and no way to talk to her. Hence the YouTube videos we all hope will somehow reach her, maybe via the local news or something. These kids have lost their cars. One was taken by the police for evidence and the other was in Laurie's and Charles' name and the payments had not been made for months. Colby lost his job due to all of this. His credit has been ruined and they have been hounded and stalked by reporters on a daily basis. This has been like a living nightmare that won't go away. They need help, so please find it in your heart to help in some way. If you haven't been a part of their life, then you don't know what they are going through, but we have been walking this with them and it's been very, very tough. They need help getting a vehicle so that Colby can get to work. Colby has been concerned with trying to keep his family safe and that has been his priority, but he's doing everything he can behind the scenes to bring his siblings home. He has felt happiness through this whole ordeal, so maybe as a community, we can help these kids get through this and fight to find his siblings. There are a lot of ways to help, even if it's not with donations. They could use some groceries or diapers. They could use prayer warriors and love and support. If you can help, then please do so. If not financially, help and share and pray. Anything else you can do is greatly appreciated. As it stands, the crowdfund is actually only $650 away from reaching its target, and I will leave a link to the fund on my social media and show notes. All references used will also be included in the show notes of either of these episodes. Before I get back into the timeline, it is important to note that this episode will include themes of murder and abuse, so please listen with discretion. When we finished the last episode, Laurie and Chad were nowhere to be found and their legal representation had just issued a statement claiming that they were innocent before he went into hiding himself. Christmas passes and on Boxing Day, December 26th, Preparing a People, the podcast wrapped up with Laurie, issues a statement denying that it is a cult. According to the statement, it is a multimedia company that focuses on video editing. Preparing a People representatives said they have not had Chad speak at an event since February 2019. They are cooperating with law enforcement and have removed podcast episodes featuring Chad and Laurie. An article on East Idaho News reads, Preparing a People hosts several podcasts, a number of which both Chad and Laurie have appeared on together over the past year to discuss their religious beliefs. As of Monday morning, those podcasts were removed and the website posted a statement. We considered Chad Daybell a good friend, but have since learned of things we had no idea about. We did not know Laurie as well as we thought we knew Chad. The statement reads, in light of current concerning media reports and ongoing criminal investigations regarding the recent death of Laurie Vallow's previous husband in Arizona and the sudden death of Chad Daybell's previous wife in Idaho, and with new reports of Laurie's missing children and the death of Laurie's brother-in-law and the unknown whereabouts of Chad and Laurie, we feel it's inappropriate to promote any media content that may feature or contain references to either Chad Daybell or Laurie Vallow. Michael James, the website operator, says Chad was a popular speaker at some of their events. Quote, he was one of our best speakers and people really trusted him, but Chad evidently had some strange ideas about things we didn't know about, James said. Occasionally that happens and when it does, you need to break with them. Two members of Laurie's extended family, Kay Vallow Woodcock of Louisiana and Brandon Boudreau of Arizona, have spoken to multiple national news outlets about Chad and Laurie's involvement with the group. Woodcock says Laurie's behaviour radically changed after becoming affiliated with the group. Both told EastIdahoNews.com they believe involvement with Preparing a People, which they call a cult, led to the suspicious deaths of Chad and Laurie's former spouses. I don't want to attack anyone's beliefs, but when you look at the fruit that's come from this group and its beliefs, it certainly, from my mind, doesn't come from God, said Boudreau. He said his ex-wife, Laurie Daybell's niece, also joined the group. He claims in interviews and on social media that several months ago, someone tried to kill him by shooting at him. James strongly denies the characterization that his group is a cult and says it is offensive to describe it as such. I have no idea what Chad and Laurie did in their spare time, but preparing a people is not a cult, James said. It's just LDS people that go to conferences. On December 28th, Rexburg police captain Gary Hagen tells East Idaho News that he doesn't think investigators are any closer to finding the children than they were 2 weeks ago. Hagen also dismisses rumours the children's disappearance is related to a custody battle. I presume this means between Laurie and Kay and the custody of JJ, as Tylee's father is deceased and her stepfather Charles is also deceased, and she had recently had a 17th birthday. 2 days later, Rexburg Police Department release a press statement saying that they know the children are not with Laurie and Chad and that they have information indicating that Laurie knows either the location of the children or what has happened to them. Police say they believe Tylee and Joshua's lives are in danger. They say Laurie has completely refused to assist in this investigation and has chosen to leave the state with her new husband. At this point, she is living the high life in a quaint part of Hawaii. In early January, Melanie Gibb allegedly reports a conversation over the phone with Chad and Laurie, confronting them about their false beliefs and cheating on spouses. On January 3rd, law enforcement, including Rexburg Police Department, the FBI and the Fremont County Sheriff's Office, arrive at the Daybell property, the former home of Chad and Tammy, to execute a search warrant at the home in Salem, Idaho. The Daybell property is 1,644 square feet, with four bedrooms and a 3.75-acre lot built in 1960. Officers search inside the house as well as the shed and barn outside. Metal detectors were used in the yard and more than 43 items were collected for examination. Police later confirmed that within these items they had found computers, cell phones, journals, documents and medications which were sent for forensic examination. Police also confirmed that within these items was JJ's medication, with pills still within the bottle. The prescription bottle had the date it was filled, as January 2019 in Arizona, which was a year prior to this search. Searches also indicated that the medication was never refilled in Idaho. On New Year's Eve, Colby Ryan uploads a video. Colby says he wants to tell people more about the children so that people can understand them a bit more. He says he loves them and wants to tell people about them. Tylee, she is a short teenager. She doesn't like to be called short, but she is just feisty. She has very dry humour and she loves friends and the office, and we were just starting to get to that point where we could joke around. She's just super funny and she's been through a lot. She is just so strong and sweet and has been growing into her own. She has really stepped up and she is so strong. I miss her. And I miss being around her and the simplicity. And then JJ. I love JJ so much. He is such a character. He loves surgery. He is obsessed with having or giving people surgery. He would sit there and give my face surgery. And we would swim in the pool and talk. He was also growing up so fast. I miss them and I love them. With everything going on, it's so hard. Everyone is asking us questions that we can't answer. On the 3rd of January, in an act of defiance, Chad Daybell's adult daughter, Emma Daybell Murray, makes faces at reporters, which was captured by KID K3 reporter. She begins sticking her tongue out when the camera is pointed at her. And the next day, Kay Woodcock reveals in an interview with Fox 13 that Charles Vallow had made recordings of Laurie. Charles told me he had recordings of her. He said nobody will believe me. And he recorded her one night. Even though Laurie says it's deleted, nothing is ever deleted electronically. Kay and Larry would be interviewed 2 days later by Rexburg Police Department. And then on the 6th, this would be when Fremont County and Rexburg Police Department would publish a press release about the search warrant that they had carried out at Daybell's house. They mentioned publicly the 43 items that were removed, including the electronic devices and medications. On the same day, Colby would launch another YouTube video addressing Laurie. He says, "Mum, I want to talk to you, like I'm sitting across the room from you. I don't even know how to say what I want to say, but I'm so hurt. I'm so hurt by all of this. I can't tell you how many people are hurt by this. I can't even explain to you how this affects so many people. I'm not sure if you know that or where you are at and what you are doing. I can't tell you how hurt and frustrated and confused I am about what's going on. I think what I want more than anything is for you. You have the power to end this. You have an opportunity to put all of this to rest. I know that it's hard maybe for you. Maybe it's something you don't want to do. I don't know. I really, really want to see Tylee and JJ. I really want this to be over, for more than one reason, and I'm not talking about myself. I'm not talking about people trying to get answers from me. I'm talking about the fact that I can't even fathom that this is happening to our family. I grew up with you. I grew up with Tylee and JJ as my siblings. I grew up with stepbrothers and sisters and a stepdad. We had a life. It seems like this life never existed at this point. I want this to be over." The next day, Laurie's niece Melanie has a court date for trespassing onto her ex-mother-in-law's property, claiming to have a search warrant to take her children back. And on the same day, Kay and Larry would announce a $20,000 reward for anyone who comes forward with information about their missing grandchild. An article on AZ Central reads, "Relatives of two missing children are offering a $20,000 reward for information leading to the recovery of Joshua J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan." Larry and Kay Woodcock, Joshua's biological grandparents, made the announcement in Rexburg, Idaho, on Tuesday after meeting with local and federal law enforcement. 7-year-old Joshua Vallow and 17-year-old Tylee Ryan haven't been seen since September. Authorities say the children's mother, Laurie Daybell, and her new husband, Chad Daybell, have refused to cooperate with investigators and have repeatedly lied about where the children are. "I'm hoping this will allow one person to simply say, 'I saw them. I know where he's at,' so we can bring JJ, so we can bring Tylee back," Larry Woodcock said. "Please give them back to us. They are the most unbelievable children you'll ever meet." The Daybells have been named persons of interest in the case, which spans several states and may also involve the recent deaths of both Chad and Laurie's former spouses. The couple have since issued a statement through an attorney saying they love their son and daughter and look forward to addressing allegations once they've moved beyond speculation and rumour. The Woodcocks, who live in Lake Charles, Louisiana, met with Rexburg police and members of the FBI on Monday. They said they are holding on to the belief that Joshua and Tylee are alive, and they created a website where members of the public can see pictures of the children and give tips where they might be found. "Nobody has said anything contrary to that, and we hope and believe they are alive," Larry Woodcock said. "That's the reason for the reward." Laurie was previously married to Kay's brother, Charles Vallow, who had adopted Joshua, and the family lived in Chandler. Larry Woodcock said they always believed Laurie was a wonderful mother to the children, until things began to change a while ago. "There's a timeline change with Laurie, and it started a few years back," he said. "Laurie was a good mother when JJ was young. You couldn't ask for a better mother. She loved Charles. I don't know what caused this conversion." Kay Woodcock said her brother had previously confided in her that he thought Laurie, who was then still married to him, was having an affair with Chad Daybell. The Woodcocks said that they were also worried after hearing that Laurie had told others that she wanted both Charles and Joshua out of her life, and that concern grew when they learned Laurie had threatened Charles. Then Kay said Charles told her Laurie had joined a doomsday cult. "He was highly concerned about it. Her emotional state, her mental state, and the fact that she had made threats about him. It's all culminated into that cult that she's in. It's doomsday big time," Kay said. In July, Charles Vallow was shot and killed by Laurie's brother, Alex Cox, in Chandler. Cox told authorities the shooting was in self-defense after Vallow hit him with a baseball bat. But that case remains unsolved, and Cox himself died of an unknown cause back in December. "Charles was wary of Alex for a long time," said Kay Woodcock. "Alex has a reputation of no conscience. He would do things for Laurie that were just, well, I'm one of six children, and none of my brothers are going to murder anyone for me." Laurie later married Chad Daybell, who himself had lost a spouse just 2 weeks earlier. Tammy Daybell, 49, died October 19th in her Idaho home of what was listed in her obituary as natural causes. But the Fremont County Sheriff's Office is now questioning that claim and has had her remains exhumed for an autopsy. The Woodcocks said they used to talk to Joshua frequently through video chats and phone calls, but that they were only able to talk to him for 3 minutes after his father died on July 7th. Laurie Daybell and the children reportedly moved to Rexburg, Idaho around August. We don't know why we weren't allowed more access to him, but we reached out constantly, email, voicemail, text, whatever, and never got a response. So that was very concerning to us, Kay Woodcock said. The last call was an awkward call, Larry Woodcock said. It was like someone was watching him and directing him. Rexburg police interviewed the Daybells on November 26th and said that at the time the couple falsely claimed the children were with relatives in Arizona. Investigators returned for more questioning the next day, but the couple was gone. The Woodcocks say they don't know where Chad and Laurie Daybell are currently. The Fremont County Sheriff's Office said Monday that investigators searched Chad Daybell's home, removing 43 items. On the 8th of January, Laurie accesses JJ's app from his old school, and we've heard that she's done this a number of times up until this point. 2 days later, Chad's youngest brother, Matt, releases a statement saying how unhappy he is with Chad's sudden marriage to Laurie and asks him to cooperate with law enforcement regarding the children's whereabouts. The statement, which can be found on eastidahonews.com, reads, "Due to the circumstances surrounding the unknown whereabouts of JJ Vallow and Tylee Ryan and the suspicious death investigation of Tammy Daybell, I feel I must make an official statement at this time. My name is Matt Daybell. My wife is Heather Daybell. We have been residents of the Rexburg area for over 15 years. Chad Daybell is my oldest brother. I have not seen nor directly spoken to Chad since Tammy's memorial here in Rexburg on October 23rd, 2019. Since that time, I have texted Chad twice. Once when I heard from a neighbour of his quick marriage to Laurie Vallow, expressing to him my shock and dismay at this news. Secondly, just recently, pleading with Chad to cooperate with authorities and reveal the whereabouts of his new stepchildren. I have not been close to Chad since childhood. My immediate family has had little association with Chad the last many years due to our concerns with his religious claims and particular books he had chosen to publish, including his own. We are deeply saddened at the recent events that have played out for the last several months. It is our hope and prayer that JJ and Tylee are found safe. We want for the truth to be found, whatever the truth turns out to be. Neither I nor my wife and children have any more information than what has been reported by the news media. I plead again for Chad to come forward and cooperate with this investigation so that this very difficult situation might be resolved. My wife and I ask for privacy for us and for our children, and we will not be giving any further comments at this time." Annie adds to her timeline here that it's notable that Matt adds to his statement that he represents the views of him, his wife and his children, not his extended family or parents. On the 14th of January, Melanie, Laurie's niece, is interviewed by Rexburg Police Department. On this same day, surveillance footage from Yellowstone National Park is received by Rexburg Police Department. This is important, as this was the place that Tylee was last seen alive. And in the now infamous photo, you can see Tylee on this day, standing with JJ, smiling proudly, with Uncle Alex standing in the background. On the 25th of January, law enforcement locate Chad and Laurie on the island in Hawaii. Laurie's gone back to Kauai. Law enforcement then serve Laurie with a child protection order from Madison County's prosecutor's office in Rexburg, requiring her to produce Tylee and JJ to Idaho's Department of Health and Welfare or the Rexburg Police Department by January 30th. That gives her 5 days. An article found on eastidahonews.com reads, "Authorities in Madison County have filed a child protection order on behalf of 17-year-old Tylee Ryan and 7-year-old Joshua JJ Vallow. The two children have been missing since the end of September. Rexburg police say the children's mother, Laurie Vallow Daybell, and her new husband, Chad Daybell, refused to tell them where the children are and have lied to investigators about their location. Police are also investigating the deaths of Chad and Laurie's former spouses. On Sunday, Hawaiian law enforcement, in cooperation with federal and eastern Idaho authorities, served a search warrant on the couple in Kauai, Hawaii. EastIdahoNews.com has learnt that days before, the couple was also given the child protection order on behalf of the Madison County Prosecutor's Office. In a news release, Madison County Deputy Prosecutor Rob Wood said child protection actions are normally confidential and sealed to protect the anonymity of the parties. However, the prosecutor's office has obtained a court order that allowed them to admit to the existence of the document and to release details about it. The order requires Laurie to physically produce Tylee and JJ to the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare in Rexburg or to the Rexburg Police Department within 5 days of being served the order. The Kauai Police Department served Laurie the order in the city of Princeville on the island of Kauai, Hawaii. Wood, in the news release, said Chad was with her when the order was given, but that neither of the children were seen with the parents. Furthermore, authorities say that there is no evidence of Tylee and JJ ever being with them in Hawaii. Failure to comply with this order may subject Laurie to civil and criminal contempt of court. Kauai police said Laurie and Chad have been staying in Kauai for an unconfirmed period of time. They have spent the last weeks coordinating with law enforcement in Rexburg. Kauai Police Department's desire is to continue to assist the Rexburg police in whatever way we can with their efforts to locate the missing children, said Kauai Police Chief Todd Raybuck. It's our sincere hope that the children have a safe return. The order also asked the court for permission to alert the public that they are seeking anyone with knowledge regarding the location, health and safety of the children. Additionally, the order confirms the search warrants were issued for the couple's vehicle, Hawaii home and their persons on Sunday. EastIdahoNews.com was on the scene when the Daybell's rental vehicle was seized. Afterwards, East Idaho News reporter Nate Eaton approached Chad and Laurie in the parking lot of the resort. We asked several questions, including the whereabouts of the children, and Laurie only responded to one. When told people in eastern Idaho and across the country were praying for her missing children, she said, "That's great." The Daybells were not arrested Sunday and have not been criminally charged. Police declined to say what they are searching for and if any evidence has been found. The next day, on the 26th of January, law enforcement in Kauai served search warrants to Chad and Laurie and on a black Ford Explorer that they had rented, which was in a parking lot of the beach resort. Law enforcement found the following items in their possession: birth certificates for both Tylee and JJ, Tylee's financial transaction card, JJ's iPad, another iPad locked into JJ's Apple account, JJ's school registration receipts from Kennedy Elementary School in Rexburg, Idaho. Annie Cushing then notes in her timeline at this point that these things should not be overlooked. Tylee's card was active at the time and had been used since she was last seen. It would be very difficult to prove plausible deniability, re the theory that Chad didn't know Laurie had a minor child when she had their birth certificates and iPads, one with JJ's name on it, in her possession. Between having JJ's iPad she had in the car, another iPad that was logged into JJ's Apple account, and her login activity with JJ's previous school app, it's possible she missed JJ. She'd logged in 5 times since withdrawing him from the Life Academy. On the same day, law enforcement would use an issued search warrant for the condo that Laurie and Chad had been renting. Officers later discussed that there was no evidence that children had ever lived there. In the rented home, they found 2 beach chairs in the garage, 2 exercise mats in the garage, 2 beach towels in the garage. There were no items in the garage or condo that appeared to belong to a minor child. There was no evidence of a 7-year-old boy. Nothing like clothing or toys or books or JJ's medication. There was a second room in the condo that had no signs of ever being lived in. On January the 29th, Kay and Larry file for emergency guardianship of JJ in Idaho. On this same day, a day before Laurie is supposed to produce the children, Chad and Laurie clear out of the condo that they were staying in and move into a nearby beach resort. On the 30th, Laurie fails to produce the children and does not appear in front of Madison County authorities. However, she is not arrested at this point. I read online speculation here that perhaps law enforcement were hoping a family member or friend in either Phoenix or Idaho may produce the children on Lori's behalf. Still, by defying law enforcement, she risks civil and criminal charges. Kate and Larry also release a statement begging Lori to share the whereabouts of the kids. An article on thedailymail.com reads, "Show me they're alive," Larry said. "The only thing I care about is these two grandkids. We're here. I'll get on my knees. I'll beg. Just give me JJ. That's all I want." JJ's grandmother described Vallow as a monster and said she was smug and arrogant. "Bring the kids, that's it," Kay said. "I don't care to ask her anything. I don't care." Kay admitted she doesn't know what will happen next, and she's clinging to hope that the children are still alive. "I'd love to know where those kids are, and I think all of America wants to know where they are. I think all of this is beyond crazy," she said. "How do you not know where your child is? How do you not know? How do you not have them for 4 months? She's got all the attention on her, good, bad or indifferent, and it's going to be bad if she doesn't show up," Kay said. "Do I believe? Yes, I want to believe that she will," Larry said in an interview with ABC News. "Do I think she's going to bring them? Honestly, no." "Nothing with Lori makes sense right now," he said, adding that the Lori he's known for the past 12 years is not the same person that is here on Earth today. The next day, on January 30th, law enforcement interview a lady called Sydney Woodbury Schenck. "Although it is unsure exactly who this person is and how they link to the case, I thought it would be worth mentioning in case it ties the case together later on in court." On this same day, Lori retains an attorney, and the next day she accesses JJ's school portal once again. In early February, Lori has her church records transferred to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Kauai. Tylee and JJ's names were not included on the record. Chad hadn't transferred his records to the new ward yet, but he had since by this point been excommunicated from his church for declaring himself a prophet. On February 2nd, Lori and Chad attend a church service at the LDS Church on the island of Kauai. 2 days later, Lori would access JJ's school portal from the school she withdrew him from on the 5th of September the year prior. On this same date, the Life Academy in Chandler would finally discover that Lori has accessed this portal on the 7th of September, the 21st of November, the 20th of December, the 8th of January, the 31st of January, and the 4th of February. Upon realizing that she had been accessing the portal to get updates, the Life Academy removes and blocks any further access of this information. On the 10th of February, law enforcement report that they also found Tylee's cell phone with Lori in Hawaii, which would suggest that Colby was right in thinking that it wasn't Tylee who was messaging him. 2 days later, Dateline's Keith Morrison receives a tip that Lori and Chad had packed up their belongings and were planning to head to Mexico. 2 days later, the Dateline episode titled "Where Are the Kids?" airs, and the case starts picking up more national attention. On the 16th of February, Lori and Chad check out of their beach resort, and the next day they are seen boarding a plane to Maui. On this same day, Ian Paulowski, new husband of Lori's niece Melanie, who by this stage had spoken to law enforcement a number of times without telling Melanie, then went on to tell Melanie that he'd spoken to law enforcement, and then began to document everything that he'd told law enforcement onto his laptop. He then gave the laptop to his son via his ex-wife. Ian's ex-wife Natalie then finds a note on this laptop. She shares this information with Melanie's ex-husband Brandon Boudreau, and Brandon would eventually include what he'd learnt from this document in court. Now, bear with me as I read this out, because this is some of the most significant cult-like material that we have come across so far in this case. The document, written by Ian, says this: "Multiple probations, minimum of 9 mortal lives to become exalted, but more to become gods. After 2 mortal lives, you can choose to sign a light contract or a dark contract. Note, choosing light or dark isn't permanent. You can choose not to be reborn if you are satisfied with your progress. Veil grows thinner each time you are reborn. Multiple sealings possible, but males can choose one true spouse or have many. Translation. Translated beings cannot die, cannot reproduce, do not sleep or eat, and do not feel the sorrow of the world. Injury is possible, but healing is accelerated and it's never fatal. It's done in multiple phases, usually lasting 3 days. Upon completing the last phase, the Lord appears to be translated. Physical can be any physical ailment from sexual desire to disease to severe fatigue. Emotional, any emotional or mental ailment. Spiritual, a great test of faith, a time of darkness and doubt. Sexual, possible new phase discovered as husband and wife become united sexually, possibly increasing the power or vibration. There are 50 dark translated humans. Detectives Hope and Hermosillo have been identified as such. These were the officers that were doing welfare checks. They work under the direction of Satan, Lucifer and Cain. Zombies. Human bodies that have had their original spirits forced from them and have been possessed by either a demon, original third of the heavenly host who followed Lucifer, a disembodied spirit, once living human spirits who have chosen not to be reborn into another probation, or a worm slash slug, creature controlled by Lucifer that enters the body to control the host. Spirits can be pushed from their bodies during traumatic events or deadly injury. Spirits pushed out are trapped in limbo as the bodies they are tied to are still living but cannot be occupied by spirits anymore. Spirits trapped in limbo cannot progress to a new mortal life and cannot re-enter their existing body. The only way to move forward is to await the death of their current possessed body. This is an illegal action against heavenly law performed by the possessor. Teleportation. When translated beings are needed, they may, with the Lord's permission, teleport to the necessary location to perform their assigned duties. Dark and light portals. Physical objects all around us have ties to the spiritual world, and you can open portals or gateways of both light and darkness through which light and dark entities may pass. Church of the Firstborn and the 144,000. The Church of the Firstborn is a higher organization and God's church in its truest form on earth. The mysteries of God are revealed to those who have become a part of it. Terrestrial beings, terrestrial blessings and locations begin to be revealed to members. Doctrines add to but do not replace those of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Prophet of the Mormon Church presides over the general congregation, while others are called specifically to run the Church of the Firstborn. There are multiple branches throughout the world. The 144,000 are called to bring to pass all signs of the second coming of Christ. Multiple groups specializing in different powers and activities. Chad and Laurie's group specializes in healing and music. Patriarchal Order of the Holy Melchizedek Priesthood. A higher priesthood bestowed to Chad by Peter, James and John. Priesthood keys and authority bestowed upon women. Women may perform all the same blessings and ordinances as men. Dark Church and Priesthood. Satan is God's exact opposite. Lucifer has a body, was once an apostle and fell. Cain was the first dark being to be translated in this creation and walks the earth with 50 dark translated beings to prevent or delay the Lord's second coming. Spiritual gifts or powers. People can manipulate the elements to do the Lord's will and bring to pass signs of his second coming. As a side note here, I did read somewhere that apparently it is believed by the people in this group that Zulema Pastines, Alex's wife, was believed to be able to manipulate the weather. If you can imagine it, it's real. Every fantastic idea is a reality somewhere, including magic, wizards, sorcerers, witches, etc. Spells and curses in Harry Potter are real but require great, focused will to use. Also, supernatural creatures exist, such as dragons, fairies and centaurs. Spiritual weapons, dark and light weapons, weapons that cannot be perceived by telestial beings that injure and scar the spirit. Spiritual healing. Healing malachite solution. Malachite is said to have healing properties, administered by calling on it in a blessing. On a side note, this is the material of Laurie's new wedding ring that she ordered from her deceased husband Charles Vallow's Amazon account. Ian's document goes on to explain the relationship between Melanie and himself. It reads, "When Melanie began sharing all of these things with me, I tried to keep an open mind. I'd only met her days previous, but felt very comfortable around her. I believe there is more to the gospel than what I have seen so far, but I never thought it would sound like this. The ideas seemed harmless at first, and she sounded pretty certain of some of them. She talked about how she'd learned some of these things in the temple and others from Chad and Laurie. Upon first meeting Chad and Laurie, I didn't get a bad impression of them, but they did seem different. I didn't think anything of that, as I feel that's a fairly normal thing to experience. I didn't give them much thought, as they said they were planning on taking off, and that I'd be given the reins on taking care of Melanie. They said they'd be going to Hawaii and invited me to come and visit sometime. Later, Melanie explained porting and that they would use that method of travel to get there. The first time hearing all of these new beliefs was a jolt. I was looking for someone spiritual, but this is a leap beyond that into concerning territory. I had fears and doubts, but I trusted Melanie and wanted to give it a fair chance, so I continued to listen and ask questions in hopes it would click for me, but it never did. There was fun and exciting ideas, but it felt like many of them were ripped straight from Dungeons and Dragons. Between the stats, accounts of dark and light weapons, and words spoken in blessings, it sounded like that appealed to me. I couldn't find anything to confirm it as I prayed and asked. I figured anyone called something like this would struggle, but how else would they make me aware of these things? I continued to try and keep an open mind and proceed with caution. Melanie began to share the fact that she feared for the lives of her two children based on a dream she'd had, where they came to her. They brought her tidings of great joy. Her daughter thanked her for allowing her the freedom to use her agency until the end. This concerned me and made my heart ache for her. I felt there was no way anything could have happened without people finding out. We married faster than any sane couple would, but we both felt it was right. On our wedding night, she began to elaborate on the ideas she shared earlier about her children coming to her. She explained zombies and her fears about what Chad and Laurie stated concerning the original spirits being caught in limbo until the body's death. She stated that Brandon had been possessed by a demon or another dark entity sometime after June of this year. She was told either through revelation or by Chad that something would happen to him, that something needed to happen to him in order for his spirit to progress and for the Lord's plan to continue. She didn't take well to the idea of her husband dying as part of the Lord's plan, but didn't think action would be taken by anyone. She still loves Brandon and would never wish any ill on him. It just sounded to her like it would be something that happened on its own when it was the right time. This is where things started becoming concerning to me. She shared the idea that Chad and Laurie could have directed Al to take a shot at Brandon. It wasn't anything she was sure about. The concern began when she was called into the Gilbert Police Department. And
enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an Orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Asked about Chad, Laurie and Alex after the attempt on Brandon's life. She was later given the impression that the bullet needed to move 5 inches so as not to hit Brandon. Initially to me it sounded like this was told to her by Chad. This discussion moved to Chad and Laurie's missing children. At the time, only JJ was counted as missing and the Rexburg Police Department had conducted raids on Melanie's apartment along with Al's. Melanie had been told by Chad and Laurie that their children had been possessed and had become zombies. She shared concerns that she's been told Brandon needed to die, and that may indicate that Tylee and JJ needed to die as well. She told me she was worried that Al may have had to take care of the kids. She explained that Al had great faith and never wavered in his trust in the Lord. No task would be too difficult or great for him. When I asked for clarification, she restated her concern verbatim. At that point, I became severely worried, but I told myself there's no way I just married into a situation so sinister. I spent the next 2 days trying to justify my actions and reassure myself that everything was fine, but I couldn't get to that point. My ex-wife Natalie had been asking for Melanie's name so she can check her out on social media and get an idea of who she is. Melanie had been adamant that I not share her full name with anyone for fear that Brandon may locate and harass her. I couldn't justify that and eventually gave Natalie Melanie's full name. On Tuesday, December 2nd, I got a call from my mother. She'd just gotten off the phone with Natalie. When we divorced, Natalie made a point to cut herself off from my entire family and hadn't spoken to any of them for 8 months. She had made as little contact with me as possible, but hadn't been unkind since the initial conflict of the divorce. My mother told me she'd just received a video call from Natalie and that Natalie was terrified. She'd managed to reach Brandon through his business and heard his side of things. She'd been told that Melanie was in a cult and that she had tried to have him killed. While I didn't and still don't believe she had anything to do with his attempted murder, I was still terrified at the possibility. The next morning, on the way to work, Natalie called and we were discussing how to handle this in order to keep our kids safe. She told me she'd be going to meet with the police. I told her I'd go along and lay out everything I understood. I saw two possibilities. The first was that Melanie isn't who I thought she was, and I keep myself and my family out of a dangerous situation. The second was that Melanie has been taken advantage of, and I'm going to get her out of a messy situation and get her healed. When meeting with the police, I intended to share things as I understood. The detectives were present along with an FBI agent named Ricky. I've since shared all of my concerns with Melanie and have gotten clarification on some of them. What I shared with the police were the ideas that Chad, Laurie and Alex may have planned the shooting at Brandon and that Tylee and JJ may be in serious danger if Melanie's fears have any validity. If shooting at Brandon was indeed based on the idea that he was no longer actually Brandon and needed to die as part of the Lord's plan, then the kids' lives could be forfeit based on the idea that they're not really Tylee and JJ anymore. I shared that Melanie had concerns about them participating in the shooting and was against anyone trying to hurt him. She couldn't see them doing these things, but she also knew they would follow the Lord's will as they saw it. Such a thing would be a huge threat to God's plan and would need to be dealt with directly. Alan Zulema stayed in Las Vegas and were preparing earthquakes at the time. At the time I spoke with the police. I shared concerns for the safety of my kids and Natalie. I offered to help in any way I can. I then allowed them to pull data from my phone. I met with them again the following afternoon and restated what I knew for a few other detectives, Lieutenant Ball and another FBI agent named Travis. They shared some mild concern about me potentially spying for Chad and Laurie. I explained that I was there because I was concerned primarily for the safety of my kids and that I wanted to get Melanie out of this if possible. They gave me a recording device that looked like a thumb drive on a keychain. My plan was to record anything I thought could help locate Tylee and JJ, locate Chad and Laurie, and be calling, and understand what happened when Brandon was shot at. If I thought Chad and Laurie were going to be calling, I'd turn on the recorder and just let it run until they'd hung up. I don't feel that anything substantial was recorded as Chad and Laurie never talked about the kids or their location. Most of the conversations consisted of everyone commiserating about the current circumstances, discussing religious ideas and just catching up. In addition to the recordings, I would talk with Ricky and he'd let me know about things that may come up in conversation. He was never specific, but would give me enough information for me to know when it came up. These tips turned into Tammy's body being exhumed and hours passing. On the 19th of December, a detective contacted me and told me they had another warrant for Al's apartment next door. He asked if I'd give them the code to the garage so they wouldn't have to break in the door. I shared the code, I didn't see any reason not to. They went in with a forensics team and looked for any evidence of JJ having been there. Melanie saw them there and spent the afternoon at my apartment. That night, I went to the apartment and looked around to see what they had been doing or if they'd taken anything. I also wanted to see the warrants to understand what they'd been looking for. After looking around, I went to see Melanie at my apartment. I finally broke down and told her that I'd spoken with the police and that I don't believe any of this. I didn't know how she would react, but I couldn't hang on to the stress anymore. Of course she was hurt, feeling betrayed, but she reassured me that she loves me and that she understands why I did it. At that time, I didn't share that I'd been recording anything. I wasn't sure if we'd hear from Chad and Laurie again. Over the following week, we had discussions on our situations and I came to understand things a little better. She was legitimately afraid of the ideas I'd shared with the police and FBI, but they weren't anything she had any proof of. As I've spoken with her and dug into the details, I've come to believe that she truly doesn't know anything about who shot at Brandon or where the kids have gone. She only has what-if scenarios that she shared. I'm worried that I jumped the gun and have sent the authorities on yet another wild goose chase, along with prompting them to light up the national media with pieces of what I shared. My intent was to protect my family and help solve the case of the kids' disappearance, not smear anyone in the public eye. I certainly didn't want to give Brandon any ammo to hurt Melanie any more than he already has. I still have my doubts, primarily, why not turn to the police first instead of disappearing if you claim your life is in danger? Why leave your innocent niece here to clean up the mess and encourage her not to cooperate with the authorities? Why encourage her not to fight for her kids? Her ex-husband now has temporary sole custody as a result. Why not simply provide proof that the kids are okay and put an end to this insanity? Isn't it odd that the two detectives assigned to your case happen to be two of Kane's dark 50? Everyone trying to do their job and save these kids are either evil or deceived. Your kids are missing and it doesn't come up once during a handful of lengthy conversations. There are so many more questions I have. I don't ever want to have anything to do with these two after this. Melanie has been put through the ringer because of their paranoia and now is in the hot seat because I went to the police to try and help. I know she's done nothing wrong and I want her free from this. I will no longer openly cooperate with the police or the FBI, but I will through a lawyer. My final straw was when I received a call on Friday from Ricky where he threatened charges of lying to a federal officer and or being an accessory to the disappearance of Tylee and JJ because Melanie couldn't clearly answer questions about the religious aspects of the investigation. After I shared my doubts with her, her world shattered. She couldn't answer those questions because she doesn't know what she believes about those things anymore. There was so much information dumped on her by Chad and Laurie that she can't remember what she learned from them, from the podcast she listened to, or on her own. A 20-year veteran FBI agent throwing a hissy fit after one shaky interview tells me all I need to know about how they want to handle this. She didn't trust authorities before because of how poorly they had treated her when she went to pick up her kids with a court order in hand. Whew. So, Annie makes a side note in her timeline here that reads, "I'm not buying that Ian just happened to journal his entry into this group, which he left in an unprotected file on his laptop, that he then turned over to his ex-wife to find. To me, the note has a very contrived feel to it and puts both him and Melanie in a very favourable light. Melanie moved to Rexburg away from her four children. Whatever the reason, it must have been compelling enough to motivate her to move away from her kids. I'm not buying that casual interest in this group could be compelling enough. A lot of people on the internet have also found it very interesting that he said they met on online dating, but they happened to both be in the Church of Latter-day Saints and lived just down the road from each other and both be recently divorced. people on the internet are struggling to accept all of these coincidences. On February 12th, a judge makes no decision during a closed-door status conference on the Woodcocks' request for emergency guardianship of JJ. 4 days later, Local News 8 reports a possible sighting of Tylee at a concert in Nashville. Unfortunately, this lead doesn't play out, and it's never verified whether Tylee was positively identified. On the 18th of February, Laurie and Chad return to Kauai. And on this same day, a search warrant was used at the self-storage unit, where law enforcement remove all of the items in the unit, which we know by this stage included baby photos of Tylee and JJ on a stitched blanket, items with JJ and Colby's names on, children's bikes, and a handful of other items. It would also be on this date that the Madison County Prosecuting Attorney's Office would submit a criminal complaint against Laurie. The complaint includes these 5 crimes: 2 felony counts of desertion and non-support of dependent children, resisting or obstructing officers, criminal solicitation to commit a crime, and contempt of court, the last 3 of which are described as misdemeanors. Annie notes here that after the court documents are released, it is clear that Laurie has taken Chad's last name after the wedding. She is now, officially, Laurie Daybell. On the 20th of February 2020, Laurie Daybell is arrested and taken into custody at 2:30 p.m. in Princeville, Kauai, by Hawaii law enforcement. She is finally charged with 2 counts of felony desertion of a child, as well as the aforementioned misdemeanor charges of obstruction, solicitation, and contempt. She is held with a huge $5 million bond pending extradition to Idaho. The next day, on February 21st, Laurie has her first court hearing in Kauai. The highlights include Laurie's defense attorney, Daniel Hempe, requested her bail to be reduced from $5 million to $10,000. Justification for the reduction by Hempe was, "We are sitting here with a couple of felonies and misdemeanors and a $500,000 bail." Judge Kathleen Watanabe kept Laurie's bail at $5 million. Laurie asserts her right to an extradition hearing to fight extradition to Idaho. That hearing is scheduled for March the 2nd. Prosecuting attorney Justin Koller requested Laurie be remanded without bail. Koller requested an identification hearing be set for March the 5th, 2020. Laurie exercised her right to demand a governor's warrant. Hempe alleged that the police officers from Idaho questioned Laurie with Kauai police while she was in custody, even though they knew she was represented by counsel. Koller requested that if Laurie posts bail and has a passport, she surrender it to Kauai Police Department. Clearly, Laurie had focused her transformation efforts on her new husband as he emerges on social media and the news with new clothes and a new haircut. On the same day, Laurie Vallow is booked into Kauai Community Correctional Centre. On February 23rd, child custody papers reveal Ian Pawlowski provided statements to law enforcement that Melanie Pawlowski, Brandon Boudreau's ex-wife, told him shortly after they married that she conspired with her uncle Alex Cox to kill Brandon. Brandon alleges that Melanie was motivated by a $1 million life insurance policy. Melanie's new husband, Ian Pawlowski, told law enforcement Melanie once said something to the effect of, "Sometimes children are full of light, and then they just go dark." The next day, on February 24th, Chad cancels the lease on the condo he and Laurie had been staying in Kauai. And on the 25th, Madison County Prosecutor's Office subpoenas Laurie and Chad's Princeville landlord, the beach resort, as well as JJ's school in Rexburg, the Kennedy Elementary School. They are told that they each have until the 9th of March to produce any and all documentation dating from the 1st of September 2019 up to the present day regarding Tylee, JJ, Laurie, Chad and anyone else involved in this case. On the 26th of February, Laurie waives her challenge to Idaho's extradition request. The judge instructs prosecuting attorney to have Idaho authorities return Laurie to Madison County as soon as possible. Laurie's decision to waive comes straight after her request to have a $5 million bond lowered and that being denied. On this same day, Melanie, Laurie's niece, has her attorney issue a press release. This includes denying Ian admitted any wrongdoing with the kids and denies knowing where they are. She also denies having anything to do with the alleged shooting of former husband Brandon Boudreau. On February 27th, one of Charles's sons speaks out to East Idaho News, who released the article. It reads, "One of Charles Vallow's sons says he has not had time to grieve. He has spoken little publicly about what's happening with his family, partially because he's scared, but mainly because he doesn't want the spotlight on himself. In fact, he asked EastIdahoNews.com not to use his real name, so we'll call him Steve in this story. Steve's father, Charles, was shot and killed in Chandler, Arizona on July 11th. Vallow's wife, Laurie, did not tell Steve or his brother that their dad was dead until 36 hours later, and the shooter was Laurie's brother, Alex Cox. I was initially in disbelief because I had just talked to my dad, Steve recalls. I was texting him, and I remember calling him a couple of times in the morning he had gotten shot, and he didn't respond. It was really weird. He usually returns calls and texts relatively fast, so something was off." Laurie informed Steve and his brother that Charles was dead by texting them a message. A text chain provided to EastIdaho.com shows the boys repeatedly asked Laurie for information surrounding the death, but she didn't answer their questions and was vague in her responses. Finally, on July 20th, Steve texted Laurie, "If you won't answer those questions, can we please have his watches and other stuff he always talked about and had around?" Laurie responded within an hour and told Steve she would send some items to his house. That was the last communication he has had with his stepmother. "My dad had a collection of watches, very fancy watches. He wore nice watches for years and years, so I thought she was going to send me some of them," Steve said. "The package arrived and inside were two cheap Timex watches you'd find at CVS. Anything that was worth money we didn't get. I'm assuming she sold everything else." Steve says Laurie refused to tell them where Charles's body was or if a funeral was planned. Steve and his brother eventually figured out the mortuary where his dad had been taken and they walked inside to speak to the funeral director. He was very shaky and nervous. We asked him for information and he said something like, "I can't tell you that. It was requested that I tell you nothing," Steve says. A memorial service was arranged, and Laurie never showed up. Neither did Joshua J.J. Vallow, Charles and Laurie's seven-year-old son who has been missing since September. Kay and Larry Woodcock, J.J.'s grandparents, begged Laurie to allow the boy to attend, but she ignored their requests. The last time Steve saw J.J. was April. "I love to hang out and play with him and watch movies and run around. He would call me all the time, something like 15 to 20 times a day, and then it dropped to 2 or 3 times a day, and then it just stopped," Steve says. "I figured maybe he's going to school or something like that. I never thought anything bad was going to happen to him or Tylee." Steve was never close with Laurie, even though he spent summers and weekends with her and his dad. He was 10 years old when Laurie and Charles got married, and describes his relationship with his stepmom as acquaintances. Her extended family members were always around, which makes Steve wonder why he hasn't heard from any of them since Tylee and JJ vanished. "Nobody has attempted to reach out. It's weird. Her family was always over and not a single one of them has said a word except Colby." When Laurie and Chad were found in Hawaii last month, Steve wasn't surprised. Laurie and Charles lived in Kauai several years ago and Steve spent time with them there. He says he was furious watching the video of Laurie ignoring questions from EastIdahoNews.com concerning the whereabouts of her children. "She can put on a smile and she'll make you believe that everything is okay. I'm surprised that she can pretend that things are just fine and dandy, but I thought it was very incredibly insulting," Steve says. "It was ridiculous. She's pretending nothing is happening and she's untouchable. Honestly, it really pissed me off." Laurie was arrested in Kauai on Thursday and charged with 2 felony counts of child abandonment, resisting and or obstructing an officer, solicitation and contempt. She is being held on a $5 million bail. When Steve learned she was in custody, he says it was the first good news that he has had in months. He believes additional charges will eventually be filed against her and Chad Daybell, her new husband. He is confident Laurie and her brother Alex Cox lied about the circumstances surrounding his father's death. They told police Cox shot Charles in self-defense after Charles attacked him with a baseball bat. "I don't believe any of it. My dad was never verbally aggressive, never raised his voice, never physically threatened anyone or anything like that," Steve says. He was very good at baseball. He played in college, so if he was going to defend himself, he wouldn't just tap an aluminium bat on someone's head in self-defense. The entire story just doesn't make any sense. As if things couldn't get more bizarre, Steve says Alex Cox's sudden death in December was mind-blowing. I was much more worried when Alex was alive about my safety, but then we didn't know if we should feel more or less safe. I don't know what happened to him, but I have a lot of ideas if they're possibly willing to take out their own. I have to assume the worst, he says. Steve says whenever he thinks about his father, he becomes sad and then upset. If he focuses on it for too long, he ends up in a bad place and he isn't quite sure how to process everything that's going on. He realises he may never know the whole story surrounding his dad's death, but he does want answers about Tylee and JJ. He hopes justice is served soon and the children are found. The truth will come out. They need to be found and Laurie needs to be held accountable, he says. I've been worried about my safety and my family's safety because I don't know how many followers she and Chad have. This needs to end. On the 29th of February, Chad returns to Rexburg. And on March the 4th, Rexburg law enforcement take Laurie into their custody and extradite her from Hawaii to Idaho. On the 5th of March, she arrives in Rexburg. Also on this date, Laurie's attorney requests a number of documents from the prosecuting attorney, which include warrants and related documents, communications between law enforcement and media, court orders, unredacted police records, handwritten notes and dispatch tapes. On the 6th of February, Laurie is scheduled to attain an arraignment hearing in Rexburg. Her bond is reduced from $5 million to $1 million by Judge Farron Eddins. Madison County Prosecutor Rob Wood would later reveal on this day that in Laurie's court hearing in Rexburg, it came to light that Laurie had continued to receive Social Security benefits for both of the kids after she left Idaho for her wedding. On March 11th, the FBI, along with Rexburg Police Department and other law enforcement agencies involved in the case, gather in Salt Lake City, Utah, to coordinate, share and review all of the present information that each respective agency has so far collected. On this same day, attorney Rob Wood and Laurie's attorneys request to move preliminary hearings from March 18th and 19th to May the 7th and 8th to allow more time to exchange and review discovery. Also on this date, Laurie's attorney, Mark Means, files a motion to disqualify Magistrate Judge Eddins without cause. It is also around this date that Colby talked with Laurie while she was in jail. On the 13th of March, Laurie has a telephonic hearing where three decisions are made. 1. Magistrate Judge Farron Eddins agrees to reschedule Laurie Daybell's preliminary hearing for May the 7th and 8th. Eddins then disqualifies himself without cause from the case. 3. Laurie Daybell's attorney, Brian Webb, announces he plans to file a motion to withdraw from the case. Edwina Elcox, who works with Webb's law firm, will also withdraw from the case. Mitchell Radford Mallard is then brought in as the judge for the preliminary hearing from May the 7th to May the 8th. Edwina Elcox, one of Laurie's attorneys, when trying to get the bond lowered, had said in court, "Here today, Laurie is innocent. Laurie will absolutely abide by any pre-trial release conditions, any sort of monitoring the court requires, that there is simply no basis for a bond this high and it must be reduced given the charges she is facing." 3 days later, two of Laurie's attorneys, Brian Wedner and Edwina Cox, withdraw from her case. Elcox would later say in a statement, "Thank God I quit when I did." This leaves Laurie with only Mark Means as her legal counsel. The prosecution would then turn over approximately 1,600 pages of documents, 15 gigabytes of videos, photos and other media over to the defence. Online communities speculated that Elcox quit after Laurie failed to produce the children a number of times. A week or so later, Detective Nathan Moffat of Chandler PD writes in an email to Fox 10 reporter Justin Lum that he is getting closer to being able to indict Laurie for her involvement in the shooting and death of deceased husband Charles Vallow. On the 30th of March, Laurie's attorney Mark Means visits with Laurie but is forced to sit in a public area and speak on a recorded line, with confidential paperwork being passed through employees. These are safety measures that have been put in place due to the coronavirus outbreak. Laurie's Rexburg apartment then goes back on the market. Laurie's attorney then requests all evidence pertaining to the deaths of Charles Vallow, Joe Ryan, Tammy Daybell and Alex Cox. He requests all the records in early April of anything pertaining to the following witnesses: Adam Cox, Charles Vallow, Alex Cox, Ethel K. Vallow, Larry Woodcock, Brandon Boudreau, Melanie Pawlowski, Melanie Gibb, Christina Atwood, Jack Daybell, who is Chad's father, Sheila Daybell, who is Chad's mother, Jason Gwilliam, Tammy Daybell's brother-in-law, Samantha Gwilliam, Tammy Daybell's sister, Summer Shiflett, Laurie's sister, Ruth Mortensen, Detective Hope of the Rexburg Police Department, Matt Daybell, Chad's brother, and Heather Daybell, Chad's sister-in-law. On the 4th of April, Justin Lum of Fox 10 News attempts to set up a meeting with Laurie in jail via the Telmate app. Surprisingly, she accepts him as a contact, but denies his call. A Redditor on the Laurie Vallow subreddit describes Telmate as Android tablets made by the Telmate company for inmates to use for free legal research, to contact family and their counsel, and to play some mind-numbing basic games on them. They're far from being an unrestricted iPad, and they cannot browse the internet freely. Everything is very restricted for them. What isn't so restricted, though, is the actual communication app used to talk with the inmate. These were brought in as a measure against COVID-19. On the 10th of April, the Idaho General Attorney's Office assumes full responsibility and authority in the investigation of Chad and Laurie's roles in the death of Chad's previous wife, Tammy. The pair are investigated for conspiracy, attempted murder, and murder. It should be noted at this time that Tammy's results have not been released publicly following her exhumation. More requests are submitted for Laurie's bond to be reduced. On the 29th of April, Chad's attorney, Sean Bartholik, tells reporter Justin Lum that he no longer represents Chad, and that Chad will now also be represented by no one other than Laurie's attorney, Mark Means. On the 28th, Laurie's nephew, the son of Adam Cox, who Charles Vallow had previously emailed regarding the strange behaviour developing between Laurie and Chad, wrote on Facebook, "Melanie is a liar and she damn well knows where JJ and Tylee are. Disappointed they'd have her on Dateline. I understand ratings, but she is involved in these deaths, attempted murders and missing kids." A few weeks later, he would go on to say, "They are all crazy and they will never accept the truth and will find a way to blame it on something else. They've always been like that, though." And later again, he would go on to say, "Obviously, someone didn't like the information I was sharing and changed my birthday on my account, so I got locked out, but it's good to be back." On the 3rd of May, Kay releases a Facebook post that she shares far and wide, encouraging others to do the same in the hopes that it will reach Chad. It reads, "Facebook friends, please share. Chad Daybell, I beg you to indulge us by reading our letter. This letter is in no way, shape or form meant to be embarrassing, slanderous, accusatory, defamatory, nor insinuates any other negative connotation. We need to talk, and this is the only way to hopefully reach you while ensuring accuracy of our thoughts and feelings, while validating this is authentic. My Facebook has not been hijacked. If this doesn't get directly to Chad via social media, we pray someone, somewhere, somehow, get this to him to read." Perhaps a level-headed, compassionate, true Christian Daybell family member or dear friend he will listen to would be optimum. Thank you. Our JJ history. JJ has been enveloped with love 24/7, 365 by everyone in his life. He has been a very special child from the moment he was born. Larry and I would have happily raised him. He is a welcomed blessing in our lives. Once Charles expressed their interest, after lots of soul-searching, we chose to allow Charles and Laurie to adopt him. There were many reasons, the first being JJ's overall best interest. A major consideration was we retained the role as JJ's grandparents. They were amazing parents, all the while reinforcing our grandparent role. Once they brought JJ home, we mourned him not being the centre of our daily world anymore. Every minute, hour, day, reminding ourselves it's what's best for JJ. We love him enough to have endured this agony, to do this for him. And God knows it was agonising. With his new life, surrounded by four adoring siblings and nurturing, loving, dedicated, active Christian parents, has allowed him to thrive and flourish. Charles and Laurie were amazing parents, all the while reinforcing our grandparent role. There was never a visit, call, FaceTime that cast a doubt. We made the best choice for JJ. Every visit, Laurie thanked us for blessing them with JJ. She was very grateful for the gift of JJ being entrusted to her. Chad, as a father and grandfather, I ask you, delve deep into your heart, your soul, and share with us, one, how to understand who you are. From what we've heard, you're a Christian, admirable, overall great family man and dad. Two, how are you in this circumstance today? How we see things. You and Laurie met. Since, there has been utter devastation to countless lives surrounding you all. I can't speak on behalf of your loved ones, although we all know they have suffered the tremendous loss of your wife Tammy. This cascade of events began. Tylee and JJ are missing for nearly 8 months. Murders, attempted murders, mysterious deaths, divorces, stolen money. I must also mention our beloved brother Charles, ambushed and murdered on the 11th of the 7th, 2019. Chad, as a dad, grandfather, human being, how does a sweet and innocent child turn dark? Dark as in the context you and your followers relate. We cannot wrap our brains around this, perhaps because it is not within the realm of normal thinking. Children aren't dark, they are light. They are the light of this world. It is people around them who are dark. Chad, how can you be so cruel to not say, show us if Tylee and JJ are okay and where they are? The anguish of everyone who loves Tylee and JJ is suffering day after day after month. It never ends. It is pure hell. If Laurie has done all of this to hurt us, please tell her she has accomplished her goal. Addressing things I believe were told to you by Laurie. Perhaps you two made these lies together. The lie about her hiding them due to a custody battle is debunked. The state of Idaho has JJ and Tylee's custodial rights. Therefore, if found, we won't have custody. The lie about us being horrible, mean, evil grandparents is a lie. We all got along beautifully. We loved her and she loved us. Ask anyone who knows us what kind of people we are. Please, Daybell family, I'll ask for volunteers to validate. Please call and talk to us. Laurie is a prolific liar. She has lied to all of you. Chad, how do you look at yourself in the mirror? In God's name, please tell us. How is this being a Christian? How do you, in good conscience, look at your grandchildren? Due to you and Laurie, we can't see and hold ours. It looks as if you're playing God. Are you? Looks like it, and I feel most everyone in this world agrees with us. I am begging you, Chad, end this now. Recover them. Give them to law enforcement. If you can't because they have been harmed, then, by God, be a real man, own up to your crimes and confess. Chad, you have the power to stop this now. Laurie has lied, and now it is time for you to speak. If this situation continues, you will truly wish you could portal yourself off this earth. Another galaxy won't be far enough to keep you safe. If you think your darling wife won't start singing to save her hide once you're both in jail, think again. You have no idea who you married. We don't know what's happened to Laurie, but she is gone. Goddess, Laurie is evil and dark. Chad, time to start thinking with your brain. Show Laurie and the world a real man exists in you. Do the Christian thing and end this now. If you want to talk further, we will happily oblige you. JJ's picture below. How is our baby anything more than innocent? On the 7th of May, Kay and Larry appeal to the Cox family to have a meeting with them in order to try and work together to find Tylee and JJ. They can be seen in a video saying, "You want to do something? Let's sit down. Let's talk about this. Let's be adults." And on the 25th of May, JJ Vallo turns 8 years old. The public are holding out all hope at this stage that the children are somewhere alive, perhaps being held in an underground bunker, or have even been rescued and are in the safe hands of deprogrammers. Some people had speculated that Tylee never left Yellowstone and that something tragic had happened to her within the national park. That there are acidic springs there, and predators, and the wilderness, with many different ways to die, and no guarantees that anybody would ever be found in Yellowstone National Park. We move now to the month of June, and on the 9th, the Rexburg Police Department, assisted by the Fremont County Sheriff's Department and the FBI, returned to Chad's property in Salem. This time they have a search warrant for Chad's entire property, not just inside the home, this time outside too, and the ground has thawed from winter. An article on eastidahonews.com reads, "Police executed a search warrant at Chad Daybell's home Monday afternoon. Officers in marked and unmarked vehicles arrived at 1:15 p.m. and showed some paperwork to Daybell's son-in-law, who has been living at the home with his family. Witnesses say police went into the house, exterior buildings on the property, and were seen in the backyard with cameras. They left around 2:50 p.m. It's unknown what the officers were looking for, and Madison County prosecuting attorney Rob Wood declined to comment on the warrant. The scene Monday is dramatically different than when a search warrant was served on June 9th at the same house. Dozens of officers were on the scene and roads were closed for 2 days, and Daybell's property was excavated. Upon executing the search warrant, law enforcement discovered 2 sets of human remains buried behind the barn on Chad Daybell's property. An article on KSL.com would later identify how law enforcement knew to search that particular area of the ground. The article read, "Newly unsealed court documents reveal new details about how Idaho police were able to locate bodies on Daybell's property. The probable cause affidavit for Chad Daybell's arrest was unsealed Friday, revealing that investigators used interviews, cell phone records, and the cell phone location data to locate the remains." LocalNews8.com would then release an article about Chad Daybell being arrested and charged with the destruction or concealment of evidence and booked into the Fremont County Jail. His car was towed, and the article reads, "Chad Daybell, 51, was booked into the Fremont County Jail on a felony charge of destruction or concealment of evidence on Tuesday evening. No bond has been set." Rexburg Assistant Chief Gary Hagan announced Tuesday investigators have recovered what is believed to be unidentified human remains on Chad Daybell's property in the 200 block of North 1900 East in Fremont County. The remains have not been identified at this time. Chad, who recently married the children's mother, has been taken into custody for questioning. His attorney, Mark Means, did not immediately respond to a comment. Rexburg Police, along with investigators from the FBI and the Fremont County Sheriff's Office, were searching Chad Daybell's home for the second time. The search warrant is sealed, and Rexburg Assistant Police Chief Gary Hagan said in a statement he couldn't reveal details other than to say the search was linked to the disappearance of the children. Investigators are continuing to pursue the property for any other information related to the case. Police are not going to answer questions as the investigation continues. Lori Daybell is awaiting trial on charges of child abandonment and obstructing the investigation and has pleaded not guilty. The Idaho Attorney General's office announced this year it was investigating Chad Daybell in the death of his wife at the time, Tammy Daybell. The next day, on the 10th of June, Chad appears in court for his initial hearing. Judge Farron Eddins agreed with prosecutor Rob Wood's recommendation for a $1 million bond. In arguing for this, Wood confirms that the remains found on the Daybell property belong to children. He goes on to say, "The concealment of one of the bodies is particularly egregious." Bond companies go on to say that Chad probably doesn't have enough collateral to post bail. Fox13Now.com released an article that read, "Sean Vianello, owner of Freedom Fast Bail Bonds in Idaho Falls, explains how the process works, saying there is a certain criteria Chad would have to meet. There's the cost, the state assigned 10% of the bond, then they would need a way to secure that $1 million, he said. The insurance companies are going to need a guarantee that if he takes off, they're not going to lose out on $1 million. That guarantee could include $1 million in equity, which Vianello said could mean owning multiple properties, cash collateral, and or co-signers who are local residents or business owners. At this point, even if somebody wanted to bond them out, it would be hard for them to come up with the premium, the $100,000, plus be able to secure the $1 million bond, he said. And here is where we are going to leave part three of this story. As I mentioned before, I did want to cover this story in one episode and then realised it would need to be two. But upon finishing the script, I was still left with 40 pages of information that I wanted to share with you all so that we could continue to look at this in the depth that we had already done so. Which I can only achieve if I actually do this in another episode. I hope to release the fourth episode very soon. If you would like to get in touch, please do so by emailing me at cultvaultpodcast@gmail.com or follow me on Instagram and Twitter at cultvaultpod. I'm your speaker, Casey, and thank you for joining me for an extra long episode of The Cult Vault.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.